You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Today's reading captures the culmination of Jesus' ministry before he goes up to Jerusalem and the events we call Holy Week begin to unfold. In general, the disciples are still confused, but specifically, they're angry at James and John. In the previous passage, these arrogant brothers ask to sit at Jesus' right and left when he comes into his glory. You can almost hear Jesus sigh. He reminds them that the one who will be the greatest will be the servant of all. But they still just don't get it. And that's where the central metaphor of today's story comes in, who we call blind Bartimaeus. Remember the Deuteronomistic code? You get what you deserve, and you deserve what you get. To this day, people still interpret their world through this bankrupt idea. Oh dear, what did I do to deserve this? So, according to the Deuteronomistic code and the assumption of any onlookers to our story, Bartimaeus is blind because either he's done something wrong or his parents have done something wrong, and his condition is divine retribution. So Jesus is basically flying in the face of what would have been a bedrock belief in his day. Don't be messing around with punishments God has set in motion, right? Notice how vehemently folks try to silence Bartimaeus. It's more than just trying to maintain a sense of propriety or decorum. In fact, the word used, rebuke, epitimo in Greek, is not just a simple shushing. Hey, stop messing with the set order of things, is what they're trying to say. So, let's join this episode of Jesus Ruins Everything, already in progress.
Our words of wisdom are from Mark chapter 19, verses 46 to 52. They came to Jericho. As he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out even more loudly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stood still and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he is calling you." So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said to him, "My teacher, let me see again." Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has made you well." Immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
Once upon a time, Mullah Nasruddin's wife was pregnant and due to give birth any day. One night she turned to him and said, "Husband, the baby is coming." At her instruction, Nasruddin lit a candle and watched his newborn baby be born. But just a few minutes later, he watched as yet another baby was born. And just minutes after that, he watched his wife give birth to a third child. Finally, after seeing three babies, Nasruddin abruptly blew out the candle, plunging the room into darkness. His wife asked, "Why did you do that?" "Well," said Nasruddin, "while the candle was lit, one child was born, and then another, and then another. If I hadn't blown out the candle, who knows how many more there would have been." In other words, if we turn off the light, no more babies will be born. Sounds vaguely familiar, doesn't it? Sometimes it seems expedient to just not face up to reality. It's easier to turn away, to close our eyes, to stay in the dark. And in a lot of ways, that's the challenge of our Mark passage today. Are we ready to truly see? There are a lot of interesting elements to consider. First, Mark uses some fun wordplay with characters' names and titles. We've got a main character whose name is a mashup of a Hebrew and Greek name. Bar means son of in Hebrew, and Timaeus is a Greek name that means honesty or integrity. For any of you that have studied Plato, you'll recognize the name Timaeus as one that Plato uses in one of his dialogues as his main teaching character. And since Plato's Timaeus was written over 300 years before Mark is writing, it's likely that Mark has given this character a name people would recognize, and it's a name that suggests honesty and integrity. Note how this conflicts with what people would have assumed, that the man was cursed by God, blinded for the sin of his father. Just as an aside, this story is in Matthew and Luke too, but Matthew tells it with two blind men, neither of whom are named, and Luke doesn't name the blind man at all, probably because he's about to tell this big story that is unique to Luke, featuring a guy named Zacchaeus. He doesn't want to upstage his guy with some yahoo from Mark. Names are important. So here we have a crazy tension between a Jew with a Greek name, whom folks assumed is being punished by God, but whose name is honesty, integrity. I messaged my Greek friend Yanni to double check, and he confirmed that even in modern Greek, Timaeus is the same, one who's fair. So here's a guy who's named the son of integrity, being shushed by the lunkhead disciples, being reminded that he's a nobody and to stay in his place. They're trying to make a blind man mute too. The blind man then declares what none of the disciples have done before. For the first time in Mark, and right before Jesus' big entrance into Jerusalem, Bartimaeus calls Jesus Son of David, the Messiah. In other words, the one who will bring a new era of liberation to the people. Remember, the disciples told Bartimaeus that Jesus was just plain old Jesus of Nazareth, but Bartimaeus could see something that they didn't see. In a way, he could see before the others could. Notice that Jesus doesn't presume to know what Bartimaeus wants. He opens a conversation and essentially creates a relationship. He listens. It's a simple enough question to ask, but is boundary-breaking behavior. Instead of following the social norm of avoiding Bartimaeus, who's being punished, remember, Jesus stops and calls Bartimaeus to come to him. Jesus asks the same question that he asks James and John in the passage right before this. What do you want me to do for you? Status-seeking James and John declare, how about the places of honor to your right and left when you come into glory? Lunkheads. But Bart is different. Unlike these status-seeking dingbats who still can't see, Bartimaeus asks for what he most immediately and practically needs. Let me see again. And then, being healed, Bartimaeus does another remarkable thing. Jesus says, go. But does he go? No. Bartimaeus follows Jesus on the road, on the way to Jerusalem, and before the week is out, his death. I really like the angle Reverend Dr. Kimberly Buchanan brings to the story. She suggests that the disciples are resisting seeing because they know that once they really see, life will never be the same. She writes, "Seeing can be dangerous. It can call into question everything we've ever believed. It can dismantle our faith, our theology, our worldview. Seeing can devastate us. And yet, a big part of following Jesus is seeing things as they really are. Why else would he try to show his disciples not once, not twice, but three times what was going to happen to him in Jerusalem? Seeing must be important to the life of faith. But if seeing is important to the life of faith and also has the potential to devastate us, what are we to do? Do we keep our hearts open but our eyes closed? Do we keep our eyes open but our hearts closed? Is there some way as a person of faith to keep both our eyes and our hearts open? What I'm asking is, how do we survive seeing? A few years ago, our Sierra Service Project youth team worked in South LA, Compton, and Watts. One evening, we had an immersion program where we drove through LA's infamous Skid Row. To say that what we saw was shocking is a huge understatement. As we drove through with a van full of teenagers, there was almost no breathing. We were all overwhelmed by the sheer magnitude of the poverty, the desperation. When all of a sudden, one of the girls in the back declared, "Oh, look, a puppy, isn't it cute?" I mean, that's called a pressure valve. Overcome with the reality in front of us, quick, focus on something that will distract us. That's how most of us survive seeing. But a mature faith doesn't turn away. It sees and engages with the hard things, like suffering, betrayal and death, poverty, racism, human trafficking, corruption, climate change, hunger, domestic violence, and governmental negligence. Yeah, faith looks on the happy parts of life with gratitude and joy. But a mature faith dares to look at the hard parts, even when it exacts a price. When we see the world's brokenness, we lose some of our innocence. We suffer and maybe feel even compelled to change our lives. Author Nora Gallagher writes, "I remember thinking as I worked in the soup kitchen that I didn't want to know what I was learning, because then my life couldn't go on in the same way as it had before, driving around in my nice red Volvo, thinking about what new linens to buy. What we learn, we cannot unlearn," she says. "What we see, we cannot unsee." And once again from Kim Buchanan, "Yes, it's easy to criticize Jesus' disciples for not seeing the truth he was showing them, but maybe their not seeing was a protective defense. Maybe deep down, they knew that once they really saw what Jesus was showing them, they wouldn't be able to unsee it again. Once they got what he was saying about the reality of the world, their lives were going to have to change. Once they got that following Jesus would lead them to suffering, betrayal, and death, their rose-colored glasses, faith, would no longer sustain them. Maybe the disciples avoided seeing what Jesus was showing them because deep down, they knew seeing can be dangerous," unquote. In May of 1993, South African photographer Kevin Carter took a picture that captured the horror of the famine in the Sudan. His picture is of an emaciated boy who had just collapsed, doubled over, trying to get to a UN food station. Just a few feet behind the starving boy sits a vulture, eyeing him with interest. A close friend of Carter said that after shooting that photo, the starving boy, Kevin shooed the vulture away, then sat under a tree and cried and chain smoked. He couldn't distance himself from the horror of what he saw. He could not unsee what he had seen. 4 months after receiving the Pulitzer Prize for his photo, Carter committed suicide. Seeing can be dangerous. For Bartimaeus, Jesus becomes his context for everything he will see the rest of his life. And when we too look at the world, I'm guessing we want to see it through the lens of and in the context of Jesus. It's true. We'll see suffering, betrayal, injustice, and death. It's unavoidable. The world is broken in so many ways. But a mature faith looks at those places and sees them. But as Jesus tried to show his disciples time and time again, when you look at the world, even at its ugliest, hardest, and most fragile, when you see the world in the context of Jesus, you also see the promise of new life. Bartimaeus is our example. He asks to see, and when he doesn't go, but follows, because once he sees, he doesn't want to unsee. So, what do you need to not unsee? When Baptist preacher Will Campbell was a teenager growing up in rural Mississippi, he witnessed a horrific and sadly not untypical lynching. A black man was allegedly caught stealing, and the community's upstanding white citizens reacted with what could only be described as gleeful rage. They tied the man to the back of a car and dragged his body along a gravel road, shouting hate and throwing rocks at the man. Finally, they dumped his body in the street, leaving his shredded flesh to fester in the blistering sun. Campbell said he remembers going with other teenagers in town to shout and to spit insults at this broken body. But years late, Campbell caught the vision of God's kingdom. He saw and he understood for the first time the justice and compassion and dignity that God intends for every person. It was only then that Campbell looked back on that vicious day in Mississippi with new eyes and saw the brutality and horror of what he and others had done to another child of God. And refusing to unsee what he saw, he was changed. Consequently, he became a powerful voice for civil rights in the South and was one of four civilians who escorted the Little Rock Nine students who integrated Little Rock Central High. Then he was the only white person present at the founding of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In 1961, he helped, along with John Lewis, organize and accompany the Freedom Riders, the Congress of Racial Equality, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in integrating interstate bus travel, despite white mob violence in Alabama and across the South. He was so committed to seeing things the way Jesus would see them, to love one's enemy, that years later, he befriended members of the Ku Klux Klan and visited James Earl Ray in prison. Bartimaeus asked to see. Are we that brave? Can we overcome our own inner voices shouting us down, saying, shh, be quiet? Can we cast away the cloak that is our security blanket and say, I'm ready, let me see? Are we prepared for changed vision, for letting go of the prejudices, the fears, the myths that have narrowed our scope for too long? If you're ready, if you think you're brave enough, I encourage you to prove it by joining with others at the Fountains in the 21-day Racial Equity Challenge that begins tomorrow, July 20th. You'll find details on our website, weputlovefirst.org. Wendell Berry suggested that to treat life as anything less than a miracle is to give up on it. Well, Bartimaeus stands as our model of following Jesus, one who jumps up and, unafraid of the consequences, opens up to the grace of truly seeing. His story calls us to do the same. May it be so for you and for me, remembering that seeing can be dangerous. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputtlovefirst.org.